Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Goatee Food Podcast. Today we're joined by one of England's hottest chefs. I was going to play some like operatic music under this to, you know, show how epic it is that we are in the presence of George Williams, a fast rising name. Giles Corran said that your food was absolutely exceptional. I think he said sensational food. But before we get into that and we talk about the Bull and Charlbury, which has become one of the hottest places to go in the world, I want to know, how many times has Soho Farmhouse tried to snuff you and get you to become one of their head chefs?
Actually, not at all.
Really?
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Yeah, I mean, that would be flattering.
That's not the headline I wanted to start with.
I mean, there is a lot of back and forth, mainly us taking leftover farmhouse staff, because like pretty much everybody in hospitality has been through Soho House in some way.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've had a lot of them come this way, but actually nothing goes.
Have they not tried to lure you in for one of the, you know, they've got that like small hut in the courtyard where they keep on changing like residencies. Have they not tried to get the Bull Charlbury in there? They must have done.
I heard that they got rid of the Little Bell because all the Little Bell customers were coming to the Bull.
Right. Okay.
So
that makes sense.
You know, we did say, "Oh, why don't we do like a little calf there?" But it's a different beast, really, isn't
it?
I think if you're the head chef there, that the challenge is you've got literally thousands of people coming through the door in many, many different restaurants, so many staff.
Yeah.
I'm just nowhere near qualified to deal with that kind of level of organisation.
But nor would you want that job?
No,
you can't like cook what you want. It's like a catering job rather than a kind of chef job, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's very impressive and a massively important job, but it's just not.
Not for you. Not for
talking
you.
About yeah. customers leaving, what about the beef? I sort of foresee Anchorman-esque beef with the Bell. Not the Bull, the Bell, across the way in Charlbury, the Balcom family, what are they called? Dalesford. Is there beef? Like when you walk out?
I actually haven't been over there yet.
Okay.
Mainly because...
So yeah.
No, there's no beef. I mean, I think there was a bit of checking out at the beginning. I think there was a bit of... there was some walkthroughs from some of their senior staff. We opened maybe a couple of months before they did. And I think they were most nights there was a booking from somebody from there. But now that we're underway, I mean, I think the great thing is that Charlbury's got actually a lot of people coming through it, so there's space for everybody to do really well, and there's like a Brazilian bistro that's opened up the corner, there's a really cool cafe that's open two days a week, this woman called Chloe, so hers is really cool, so it's like a bit of a foodie spot. And actually having the extra rooms that the Bell provides means that maybe they'll come over to us for one meal, having the rooms that we provide mean that maybe they'll go over there for one meal. So I think it's a happy competition. It's a little bit like in Notting Hill when all of these places suddenly opened up, like Straker's and the Pelican and Dorian and all that. It was like there's so many people that actually you create like a hub and nobody loses out.
It's like Disneyland.
Everybody wins, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
People do a long weekend. It is like Disneyland.
Yeah.
What about
Bruton? That was your anecdote about Bruton.
Yeah, like Bruton.
Right?
There's plenty of, it is like Disneyland.
Exactly.
And then there was someone like sucking onto that whole thing and actually profiting more than even the great chefs down there. What about Giles Corran? Did you know he was coming? You know, he gave you, I would say, and I read his article every single week, probably the best review I've seen in the last 5-6 years. Sensational food, the best pie and pint in the world. Just tell us, did you know he was coming? How nervous were you? Talk us through that.
Well, we kind of always thought there's obviously a chance that he was going to come in at some point because he's obviously from that part of the world and he knows the pubs around there and he's got relationships with some of the other pub owners and stuff, and obviously he's the one that you're probably the most nervous about because he writes beautifully, but when he writes cuttingly he really can cut somewhere down. But we just had no idea really, and it was throughout a really, really busy Christmas period, and so we were just kind of in the shit every day. We were just like slogging it out, and it was just so busy, and we were kind of like the foundations of the place were just creaking every day. I mean, it was absolutely awesome, but it was like there was no time to think about anything. And we now know that he came on a particular day where I think we were one chef down, and me and the executive chef, Ronnie Benetti, who actually knows Giles really well, we were just in the kitchen, like, and it was a really manic service, but it was a really fun service, but really manic. And we only found out because a few weeks after he'd supposedly visited, the Times got in touch and were like, can we have some photos? And so we had absolutely no idea he'd been in there. And I'm going to hang him out to dry here, but our general manager actually served him 6 times without recognizing him.
Oh, God, so that's quite impressive.
That is bad.
We've checked the CCTV, and honestly, the number of waiters and managers that went over to his table and just, it was testament to how busy we were at that time.
Yeah.
Just like, and it was our first Christmas being open in that way and everything, and it was just so manic. But in a way, it was great because it meant that it was a totally non-biased review, you know, because normally if you know there's any VIP in that gets written on the ticket, everyone tastes everything, and we really carefully pick the best piece of meat, you pick the best piece of fish, so you know all these amazing food critics must get, they always get the best of everything. But we had no idea, so we were really happy that that it went well. And then he came back in a second time actually, and we were able to give him the sort of VIP
the treatment
that time, but actually it's funny because he obviously it's a huge compliment to be called the best pie and pint
in the world
of your life, I think.
In the world.
But it now means that we are making I mean, we literally have a guy with pies every day.
Really?
We're basically, I mean, we're almost a pie. We're like a restaurant with a pie shop on the side.
Oh my God.
I mean, and if we run out of pies, people like
kick off.
Angry.
It's what Ruben said. We had Ruben Rubens on here, and he'd made the ribs, which Eating with Todd put on his story. Said you got to come down and eat the ribs. His smoker was too small, wasn't it? He could only do about 8 ribs a day, and people would come down from Manchester and like try to kill him with the rib bones because like they've run out of ribs. Were you not meant to be the sous chef at the Bull? I mean, have I got this right? You're obviously head chef there now, and you're incredible. But were you not originally offered the sous chef? I mean, how did you kill the head chef? What happened?
So basically, it all just happened in a massive rush. So our owners had taken control of the pub a while before, and they'd done a pop up there over Christmas. But I think for them, they're doing so much. They're opening lots of places, and they're doing so much as a business. They just want to make sure that everything's right before they sort of open. And they were kind of, the big renovations were getting done. They were, you know, stripping out the rooms and making them super beautiful and doing lots and lots of building work. Throughout that period, I think they hadn't necessarily found like the person that was going to be the head chef or the executive chef of the Bull. So it kind of came into summer, and they were like, hey, now's the time to sort of capitalize on, you know, summer and get this thing moving. And the initial idea was to basically do like a 3-month pop-up. There were lots of different chefs basically who were potentially going to be doing it. And I drove down, I was going to Glastonbury, and I drove down the day before Glastonbury, and I was kind of like, all right, you know, I had a little meeting with the team, and they were like, all right, well, I think basically on the actual opening day, it's just kind of out of all those people, it's basically just going to be you. I was like, oh, okay, fine, all right. So how many people is it? We're like, okay, it was like a 250 person opening party, and then this dinner, I was like, oh, all right. By this point, like, I really had not had any of this kind of experience. I'd just been a cook at the River Cafe, and I'd been a sort of junior sous at Dorian. Never ever had this kind of experience before. Fortunately, there was an amazing team around me that helped us kind of all pull it off together. But I was lucky that I had a few friends come down, and we basically just got the thing going. Then Ronnie came in. He's the big boss. He's the executive chef of all the sort of Cotswolds pubs and that whole program. So he's been teaching me a lot and helping me run things. And then basically after that sort of initial 3 months, it was like, well, things have actually gone really well. I was loving it down there. And then the sort of opportunity, they basically said to me, we're not looking to hire anybody else. So if you kind of want to just stay in that role.
Amazing.
But, you know, learn as you're doing it. So it's been like an amazing opportunity for me, because it's been total learning by doing and being given the freedom to do that, but within the safety net of all these amazing people, because there's so many amazingly skilled people in the business, which is the kind of best thing about working within a
group. Are you living in one of the hotel rooms?
I was.
Really?
Which was amazing. That's epic. It gets a tiny bit old when you're coming down for a morning coffee and you get pulled in for prep because actually the hotel rooms, like you don't have anything in there, like there's no fridge, so like you can't keep anything.
I read there was 24-hour room service. That can't be right for a 10 room pub.
That's the whole point.
So you've got someone on some cook ready to go all night?
No,
okay, I was about to say
drinks.
All right, for God's sake. I was thinking,
oh God, no.
No. Absolutely not. But you can get pissed all night. Hot beverages.
If you're staying in the hotel, which is great.
We need to get down there.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to experience the Bull, really, is to come down, be big eaters, big drinkers. Like, you know, you want to go for a big walk, but it's not necessarily, you know, it's still a creaky pub that's absolutely rammed on a Friday, Saturday night. So it's not the perfect place to go for a super quiet, relaxed weekend. I mean, it is relaxing if you like to relax by eating, drinking and having fun. But yeah, I mean, 24-hour service is pretty key for that, I think.
I mean, I only went there very briefly, passing through. I couldn't get a reservation on the night last summer. It was sexy. It was real. It was incredible. You walk out to the garden, there's a huge fire pit, you're doing, you know, massive carcasses of different animals. It just felt fucking awesome. Talk us through your food philosophy. Obviously, you're put into the head chef position. Your British produce first. I mean, what does that mean?
So basically, we like to think of the menu as, it's not a small place restaurant, but it's not a sort of strict a la carte starter, mains, desserts menu. It's more of a build your own meal kind of thing. And we have amazing front of house that are able to talk people through the experience that they kind of want. You know, so the first question is, when you sit down, like, are you here for like a big piece of beef and loads of veggie sides, or are you here for the Bull experience and we're going to give you lots of different things to try? So there are much smaller plates. There's a big veg section, which is really important for us. We've got a farm down, you know, 10 minutes down the road that we get incredible produce from. And like, honestly, I rocked up in, you know, late June, and I saw this like field of weeds, and I was like, these guys are having me on. There's absolutely no way this is a farm that's actually going to produce any, you know, vegetables.
Yeah,
I mean, literally, it was like barren. within like 6 weeks, this grower, Thomas, I mean, he's amazing, he's like a wizard. He was just like delivering us, like, you know, even just little salad leaves, some of that. Then within 8 weeks, it was like all these tomatoes. And I think we got like 150 kilos of tomatoes out of this, like 1 acre. It was just like one little polytunnel. Like, this guy is just a complete animal. I mean, he's just amazing. And he loves it. And he's like, you know, I remember him like studying the soil, and he was like almost like, it was like listening to the soil. Like, that's how much he was getting into it. So we have this amazing veg section, and it's not necessarily the vegetarian section. We don't like to really think of it as a vegetarian section or a vegan section or whatever. It's more a section that we can hero vegetables. So in the way that a lot of Asian cuisine, you know, you'll get green beans with like a little bit of pork lard or something like that. So we had a dish over summer that was like green beans from our farm with just like seasoned in brown crab. So there's a seasoning of, you know, fish, but it's heroing the vegetable. Yeah. And what's great about the menu is that we don't, because it's this build your own meal sort of concept, you, as a chef, it's really easy to come up with new dishes, because it basically has to be two or three things on a plate, as opposed to, you know, here's your piece of meat with like two or three different vegetables and a sauce and a this and a that. And instead, it's just like, here's some monkfish with some clams over it. And basically, our thing is like, we pride ourselves on being able to cook that thing really well and source that thing really well. And you get it on your plate, on the table, either you're sharing it or you have it as your own, and then you build it out with some of the other sides, basically.
Yeah, nice.
That doesn't work everywhere, but it works in a pub. It's sharing, and it's informal, and you don't feel, it's not like a French restaurant where it's like, you've got this like huge, rich plate of stuff. Yeah. It's kind of a challenge to get through.
But give us a couple of the favourite sort of dishes on the menu.
Our
right
bestseller
now.
is our leeks and Lincolnshire poacher dish.
Talk us through it.
So it's basically leeks cacio e pepe. So instead of I have an Italian cooking background, having worked at the River Cafe, and when I first arrived, I sort of asked what the parameters were of what we were allowed to cook, and they were like, you know, pretty much anything, you know, as long as it's British first. And I was like, pasta? He was like, no. So I found ways of trying to get elements of pasta into what we were doing. So, you know, for example, in Liguria, there's a traditional way of eating pesto is you have like trofie, green beans and little potato cubes with pesto.
Yeah.
So we did that just without the trofie. So it's like little green beans, potato cubes and pesto, super British. Every single element there was from literally from within, you know, like a mile radius of where we were. It was Basil from our farm. We actually used Kentish cob nuts a little bit further away, but you know, it was all British.
Yeah.
We don't use olive oil. We use like either rapeseed oil or infused oils that we've made ourselves, herb oils, garlic oils, that kind of stuff. And, you know, so that was like a pasta, no pasta kind of dish. But the leeks cacio e pepe was, which all my chefs hate me for, because it is honestly the biggest send down in service. But the problem is every table orders it, so you can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
But basically you just cut up the leeks, boil them for a little bit, take the rawness out, and then you just chuck them in. You'd make it exactly how I'd make cacio e pepe. So when we have staff pasta or we boil potatoes, we like keep the starchy water. We like reduce that down so it's quite nice and sort of gloopy and thick. Put the leeks into the pan, warm them through, bit of starchy water in, a few potato cubes, and then just emulsify the cheese in really slowly, like very, very finely grated. Lincolnshire poacher is similar-ish to Parmesan. I mean, it's not, and Pecorino, it's not quite there, but it's similar sort of texture. Get that in, loads and loads of black pepper, and then you toss it as if it's pasta, and it kind of comes out and it's super creamy, and it's like as if you were eating a pasta or cacio e pepe dish, but just instead of pasta, it's leeks.
Very clever.
I mean, but yeah, it's...
Give us a meat dish, you're on a roll.
Like, our pies are our bestseller, really.
Okay.
So, like, our meat, we've been doing a really nice rabbit pie at the moment, so get an enormous, because we had to make them in such bulk, probably get like 20 rabbits, joint them all, sear them all off, lots of vegetables into the pan, where she ends up being this huge gastro. But the key, and then sweat off loads of vegetables, lots of stock, and then sweet wine. So like a sweet Riesling or something like that, or like a Sauterne, goes really, really well with the rabbit. Lots of herbs, and just braise that for ages.
Let's get a drink out, Ben, because obviously we need to rehydrate. We've got a lot of questions to go through. Talk us through what we've got in the bag today, in Ben's mystery bag.
Well, the first thing is just this, which is more of a talking point.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, great.
Than anything else. Estrella. Why would I go on Estrella?
George, why would he?
Oh.
Go on, what's happened?
Is it because they sponsor the top
50?
Top 50 pubs, yeah.
Yeah. There you go. I just thought it was a nice talking point.
Thank you very much.
The top 50...
Well...
Go on.
Well, no, you
Yeah, Ben, you take.
Well, my understanding is that you don't know where you are in the top 50, but you've gone straight into the top 50 pubs.
We do know where exactly.
Oh, you do know where you are.
We were exactly. So the reason. So So we got a. I mean, being in the top 50 is like amazing. But we got this letter through the box, letter through the door, whatever, like a package with Estrella and whatever. And it was like, oh my God, we're in the top 50. You don't find out where you are until January or whatever. And there's this award ceremony. And my owners went, I think it's always hosted in the place that won it last year, I think. So it was in like quite far north, I think Blackburn or something.
Nice.
Went up there. I think it was like a horrible day. It was like super rain. It was like loads of issues with the sound. It's like, you know, but it was, they said they had an awesome time, but they get to the awards and obviously you're sort of like really excited. It's like number 50, the Bullet Charlbury, which obviously is like still amazing to be in the top
still
50,
great.
But it was kind of like,
it's in the top 50.
Still in the top 50.
Also gives you something like, to do for next year. Yeah, otherwise, exactly. You know, you don't want to go.
Well, cheers, mate. Thank you for coming down. Thank pleasure you. To meet you.
Hello,
Ben, pleasure to see you again. Obviously, just before we go into this new section and then onto the drink session, I want to know for you, what's the process of coming up with dishes? Because obviously we had Gabriel Waterhouse with the Waterhouse Project. I don't know if you know that restaurant.
Yeah, I got their stuff over lockdown, actually.
Yeah. We had him on and he talked us through how he... What was his process? He kind of...
That was mad.
Yeah.
I mean, brilliant, but mad. He just started writing random lists of things he thought might be not... I mean, that's what we all start with. But he didn't look at the seasons or produce or... He was just sort of words, is what he said. And start with... And then he would fill in the blanks. Which to me seemed slightly back to front, but... He's a mad genius, so I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think his food is probably more, I guess, innovative in a way.
Yeah.
In that it's probably a bit more sort of like out of the box than potentially ours is at the Bull. I think our food at the Bull is quite classic, and I think we pride ourselves on basically doing things that work and then cooking them really nicely.
Do you start with the polytunnel or start with?
I think we start with what we have in.
Yeah.
And I mean, basically we get 3 deliveries a week from our farm. We obviously supplement it with others at the moment. I mean, hopefully in a couple of years, our farm will be totally enough to support it all. But yeah, we obviously, you know, have local suppliers that we fill it up with. But it's, I think for me, it's more like, I'd say where I get some of my more interesting dishes from is sometimes where, because obviously we have the parameters of British pub feel, right? So, you know, we don't want to do Thai curries or pizzas or things like that, which a lot of other pubs do really, really well. But we want to, you know, I think there's an element, definitely Phil and James, our owners, you know, they set about to revitalize British cuisine and, you know, pies and a lot of what we do in Britain is amazing. And people love eating it. And I think we've kind of shown that a bit at the Bull. But at the same time, I've experienced obviously lots of other cuisines, and what I quite like to do is think of certain dishes that other cuisines have and then slightly Britishify them.
Yeah.
Not in like a sort of Brexity way, but kind of in a just, so for example, like one of my favorite things in the whole world is a schnitzel. And there's lots of like muntjac that run around Charlbury. And actually one of our probably best selling dishes is a muntjac schnitzel. And it literally just came down to like one day.
What is
a muntjac
for those who don't know?
It's like the smallest version of a deer.
Little deer.
Yeah, it's a little deer. Yeah, but they're so tender, they're so lean, so they have no. So they're perfect for schnitzeling.
Yeah.
And it was literally, I was just at home, be like, what do I love to eat? I think that's probably my starting point for everything. Is like, what do I love to eat? And that's how I got into food. Really, I was just like an obsessive eater. Like I used to eat. Like my appetite as a child was like phenomenal. My parents were saying like I used to come home from football training and have like 24 Weetabix.
What do you do with leaves? I was reading. About obviously we're talking about the farm there, you lighten your game meals or your game dishes with leaves. Can you talk us through like one of those examples?
So I think that's a thing that we definitely do a lot of is British food can get super super rich, particularly over you know that those winter periods where you're having lots of game. We were doing, you know, these like mallard with like red wine sauce on like toast with like liver. I mean, it was just like super rich. And the thing is that like I often sit there and eat that kind of food in places, and you just like get to the end, you're like, the last thing I want to have a dessert, the last thing I want to do is go out, the last thing I want to stick around and have another drink, I just want to go back home to bed. And there's like, it's always just trying to find ways to like lighten dishes. This is something that I really learned from Dorian. Max Cohen's so good at super acidic dressings and like crunchy fresh leaves alongside things. And I think that's an inspiration I've taken from there, which is, you know, so for example, with the mallard dish I just said, you know, we have these beautiful bitter leaves from our farm that we'd like very lightly grill and then dress them in soup, you know, just beautiful vinegar. Mm. And it just means that when you're slicing into this basically like fried toast with liver and mallard, then you have like a bite of the acidic radicchio just to come back to make you kind of want to come back for more. And I mean, like, bitter leaves are great for digestion and all that kind of stuff. And I personally like love having on the side of like a piece of beef or something, love having like a crunchy salad, something like fresh on the side, just to kind of keep you coming back.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with pickles. I can't stop eating them.
Exactly, pickles is exactly
But it's kind of been like, because if you look at Italian cuisine or French cuisine, they do that all the time, right? Like fresh, crunchy things along, and like it helps you digest.
Yeah.
So like eating spinach and lemon, which we would have had in our diet.
Yeah, yeah.
Helps you take the iron out of the spinach. So like, I guess it's just like, in many ways, you're bringing back what has been lost.
Definitely.
Thank you so much for that.
I think it's just about having like a balance, isn't it? And it's like trying to get the guy, because I think quite often people come in and they're like, okay, cool. I've seen these leeks on like online or whatever, or I've like heard about them before. I'm going to order a pie. I'm going to have some leeks. I'm going to have some potatoes. And I'm like, literally these people are like going to sit there and have mash, a pie with puff pastry and like this thick, rich filling, some leeks, which is basically half cheese,
and a stout,
and some potatoes, and I'm like, Jesus Christ,
you're gonna die.
You know, I feel really bad for this.
Talking about the farm quickly, just before I forget, one of your locals, I'm guessing, is Jeremy Clarkson. Do you ever buy anything off his farm? Does he come?
He has the most amazing mushrooms.
Really,
the most incredible mushrooms, and we actually now stock one of his beers as well, but. He basically came into the restaurant. So when we first opened, he really liked it, and he's awesome, and he's such a character, and he's, you know, a big supporter and everything, and we love having him in. But you know, he's come quite a lot at the beginning, and he said, okay, well look, he brought me over and he's like, oh, I've got, look at this. And I was like, it's like a polytunnel, like full of mushrooms. And it was around the time that what was that show, The Last of Us, did you see that?
Yeah.
With the cordyceps, like it was literally looked like that. It was like you're like brewing some sort of like,
what are you doing?
You know, infection to like humanity or whatever. But it's like, honestly, overrun. He's like, I've got too many mushrooms to know what to do. And I was like, he's like, okay, cool, I'm going to show up with the film crew tomorrow and I'm going to sell you some mushrooms. I was like, okay. So he basically rocks up, I'm in the middle of service, like, you know, busy, and it's like, Jerry wants you outside. And I'm like, like, obviously it's Jeremy Clarkson, you got to go outside. I'm like quite flustered, and he's like trying to sell me these mushrooms. He's like, so how much do you want for them? And I'm like haggling with him outside of his Range Rover with like three cameras in my face, being like, I don't know like, I don't know the price of any mushrooms at this point. I've been a head chef for about 1 week. Anyway, I was like, I don't know, how much do you want? He's like, have this. I was like, yeah, fine. And so then now basically he just shows up with like huge trays of mushrooms, and we just take them off him. And
nice,
but they're amazing. They're like honestly the most amazing, like huge oyster mushrooms, and put them on toast and do like lots of stuff with them.
How long did it take for you to stock his beer? I'm guessing he kept on haggling until you took it on.
I think we maybe had it, and then I think maybe we've got a new one of his on. I think.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure. Yeah, that's not my remit.
Before we go to the go-to drinks, we're going to quickly go to this new section, which is the go-to menu. So these are quick fire. Okay.
Yeah.
First thing which comes to your head. Dish you'll always order if on a menu.
I'll always order a green salad.
Green salad.
Always.
Separate vessel, like the French?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah.
dish which is on too many menus right now. Ben, you can jump in there as well.
I mean, right now, probably wild garlic. People over index on it.
Yeah, although it's only around for an amount of time.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, but it's a powerful leaf.
That's only there my for issue a with bit. It. Someone I'm very close to and love a lot, she goes and collects like 10 carrier bags with it and turns out wild garlic pesto, which sounds like, oh, how delicious and bucolic. It's like so fucking punchy. it's just not.
She needs to boil it. She needs to boil it first.
She needs to do a lot of things, yeah. But anyway, yeah, wild garlic right now.
I mean, maybe burgers, because like, yeah. I mean, honestly, everybody fucking fucks up a burger.
Best dish you've had this year?
The monkfish curry from Kiln.
Monkfish curry from Kiln?
I love it.
Ben?
Maybe some fried chicken from a Korean restaurant called Imoni in New Malden.
Freddie, what about you? Oh, thanks for asking.
Oh, yeah, Freddie, what about you?
I would say the wild rabbit pasta from Chebrew Starter.
Whoa.
Yeah, fucking good. Really good.
Do you want to answer the other two that came before?
No, I don't want to.
Why not? You put them in there because maybe there's some gold dust lurking.
What about, finally, and this is actually from Ruben Rubens, who brought it up. He says olives should never be on a menu. What do you think?
I saw that actually, and I did. Yeah, I mean, I actually enjoy olives, but only as a snack, as in I wouldn't ever have them before dinner.
No.
Unless I was at home or something, but in a restaurant, it's weird to have that before dinner. It's not like a bread basket. But if I was like at a pub and somebody had snacking olives, I probably would go for them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're going to move on from olives to your go-to cocktail. What is your go-to cocktail?
Always Campari soda.
Okay.
Campari soda is like the thing that I'll drink throughout an evening. I had it in Bologna for the first time from this place called Cafe Rubik. If anyone ever goes to Bologna, it's just like...
I went to Bologna a couple of weekends ago.
You eat it, you drink in the street, and it's just so... I was there by myself and I just sat in the street, like drinking... Yeah. Like drinking alone in the street in Bologna is very different to drinking alone in the street in London.
Yeah.
And it was just...
Were you
just
in like the student... So was that in like the student kind of road?
Yeah, sort of, yeah. It's just so fun, and it's like... So that, but if I'm feeling fancy, then I'll go for like a filthy martini. Mm. So like it's dirty, but it's got the olives actually pounded into it.
Wow.
Oh, nice.
Like if I'm making myself a martini, I'm actually in it for the olive brine. I'll go like 50% olive brine, 50%. Yeah.
And then mushed olives as well.
Yeah, just it's just about the olives, really. You know, there's lots of like...
You might as well just drink olive oil at that point.
Well, exactly, exactly. Yeah. But there's lots of like fluff around with martinis, isn't there? Sort of like twists and, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's like I'm in it for the brine, basically.
Yeah, nice.
What about your pre-supper snack? If we were coming around, not to the pub, to yours now, wherever you're living, in a house in Charlbury, I'm guessing, a flat, wherever you are.
Yeah.
If we were going to come around, you had a day off, what little snack would you put out pre-supper?
I love... little sticks with like olive, like pickled chilies and like anchovy on them.
Nice.
That with like some nice crisps, a couple of homemade dips, maybe some like sort of cold cuts.
I think Ruben said the same thing, didn't he?
Like a gilder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Gilder, yeah.
God, that's the thing to be doing right now.
It's just
hot chefs saying gilders, and I'm still thinking.
It's quite chic, I think.
Yeah. I want to be chic.
Yeah.
Now, morning drink. These are the things we're really interested in. First thing in the morning, what are you drinking? Is it anything weird?
No. Literally just coffee and water.
Black?
Yeah.
Cold water?
Quite cold. I actually like 60%, because we got a tap at work, 60% fizzy, 40% still.
Whoa.
And it's cold, but it's not freezing. No ice.
Right. So that's like flats. That's like flat fizzy.
No, it's like fizzy flat.
Fizzy flat. Fizzy sorry.
Yeah, it's fizzy flat.
Sorry.
Okay. So like a second day bottle of fizzy water.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because you get the sparkle, but it means you can down it quickly.
Okay. Yeah, right. With
yeah,
that,
which so you need, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what about your hangover drink of choice? I think you're quite excited about this question. And also, we'll pair it with your hangover sort of food routine.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should just stop the rest of the interview and just talk about hangover food at this point.
Yes. Okay, well, fine. If you want to rewrite the podcast, we're happy to do so.
Yeah.
So I came planned for this one.
This is incredible. For those listening, we are emptying a bag. I've realised for the audio, I need to explain physical things they can't see better. So,
we're starting strong.
So basically, when I'm hungover,
wow.
I like, because I'm a bit older now, obviously a bit busier. Sorry, that beer's got to me.
Can we put the bag that side, so we can see on the cameras for those watching at home?
So,
oh my God, this is like taking me back to when I used to smoke a lot of weed. Apart from the cucumber.
Yeah. So I basically,
wow,
it's almost like a sort of like hangover, like mise en place. So like the day before, I'll always make sure that I've got everything.
Oh, you have it in stock.
Ready. Yeah, properly ready in the fridge. So if you live with me, you know I'm going on a night out
if I've got these stuff.
And this is what, I'll
talk you through it because it is, it's long-winded.
I love it.
So when I was in London, obviously it's different now I'm in the country, but when I was in London, obviously I have access to Deliveroo. So the first thing is you wake up, and that's when you have your filthiest delivery, one of at least two. You're going to go either pizza. So in Notting Hill, there's a place called Brooklyn Pizza Crew. I don't know if you know them, but they only do 18-inch.
Whoa.
So you get 18-inch pepperoni, black olive, and then shitloads of hot sauce. Either that or like a Five Guys or a Shake Shack.
So this is just as you've woken up?
You're still in bed. And then that's so the first moment you get out of bed is to answer the door to the delivery guy.
Wow, beautiful.
And then you go back to sleep with two paracetamol, two ibuprofen, back to sleep.
Yeah.
Then you wake up.
Back to sleep. So sort of pizza coma.
But you've eaten the pizza.
And then you always feel better when you wake up.
Yeah.
Then it's like the snack time on the sofa. And basically, this is weird, but it is honestly, I think it's like, there must be some science behind it. I couldn't get, so I can only go to St. Louis. I would normally have like a posher version of this. I'd have like black pepper sausage on from like a local deli.
Sausage on, which you'd cut up yourself or?
Yeah. Cut to order, obviously. But like, you know, this, so this is that. And then basically, so I'd have a Lucozade original, which is what my mum would give me when I was ill.
Me too.
Have that, those two. I would actually have salt and vinegar squares. So salt and vinegar squares.
Yeah. Your favourite crisp?
These are the close second.
Hold on, Sainsbury's sold out of squares.
There weren't any in there.
There's obviously a big run at lunch today.
Yeah, exactly. Sour Patch Kids.
Great, sweet.
And I didn't get the other one. These are for later. It was going to be salted caramel.
Into the microphone, please, Josh.
It was going to be salted caramel, any form of salted caramel chocolate. So like Tony's Chocolonely or Lindt salted caramel. And basically, you go round in a circle. So
starting with?
Really?
Sip, bit of salami, bit of Sour Patch Kid, bit of chocolate, bit of crisp. And you go round.
Always in that order?
No, you can change up the order.
So it's a shot of Lucozade.
Yeah, exactly.
Followed by a piece of sausage, a crisp,
trust me.
A sour set.
And it's very weird, and like...
How did you come up with that?
I just
because it's quite disturbing.
It is disturbing. Oh, I like a lot of people hate it, but you just have to go round in a circle.
What does your girlfriend think when she looks up?
She gets in on it, mate.
She's doing like a ring of fire with.
Are you ever bringing things together? So like a piece of salami is going on the squares.
Absolutely.
That's going in.
You can like sandwich them like that.
Oh my god!
Yeah, get involved.
So it's like a patch would hit a crisp.
100%.
Yeah, that's golden.
Do you want to try and rain out that?
Yeah, I definitely. When I was at school, at break time, you know, you'd like load up on stuff. But you weren't allowed to take packets of stuff back into lessons. And so I would empty stuff into the pockets of like my coat or my trousers. Yeah. And then during the lessons, and you would forget where you'd put stuff. And so you would kind of go into a pocket and it might have like crisps, so put Maltesers in there, and you just have to kind of go with it.
Yeah.
So this is like on my street.
Can you lean over get involved?
Just get in. Because the thing is that when you're hungover, what I'm excited about when I'm hungover is that you're like a different beast. Like you want other food.
Feral almost, yeah.
Yeah, and that's exciting because it's like you get to basically live through somebody else's stomach because it's like a totally new person's stomach.
Do you drink after service in the bull?
Yeah.
Because obviously you're not in London, you don't have Chinatown, you don't have all the big bright lights.
Yeah.
What do you do afterwards?
No, I either go home straight to sleep.
Right, okay.
Or, I mean, yeah, like obviously from time to time. I mean, it's happening less. So like obviously during the opening, everyone's really excited and you know, all that kind of stuff. And now everyone's like, I'm just knackered. I mean, you're working in a pub. So at the end of service.
What's your go-to meal post-service? Like if you haven't eaten or if you've had an early staff dinner, you get back home late at night. And you're hungry, what would you whip up?
Normally, to be honest, it's just a leftover sandwich from service. So whatever's left.
Okay. It's not like a weird round circular motorway routine of shots.
No. Sort me out with another crisp.
Yeah, please. I want to know because, George, is this still part of the hangover routine?
Is this coming later? This isn't finished.
This isn't finished. Sorry, keep going.
We're nowhere near finished.
Okay, sorry, keep going.
So we're snacking.
We're going to have to buy more time there.
We're snacking in circles, right? And then that's finished. Then it's popcorn. So that's like a microdose.
Disappointed you don't have that here.
I know, but yours just has to be fresh. So it's just a microdose of salt ongoing with these on the side. Have you had these?
They're insane.
Buttons. They're the best ones.
Caramel buttons for those who are listening.
Yeah.
Caramel buttons. So we'll have one.
You have that with a McCoy's, that's unreal. Mm. As a mix. Yeah, it's so good. It's like a sandwich.
Ben's just having a caramel dairy milk button with a crisp, salt and vinegar.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Good combo.
Unbelievable. Yeah, yeah.
It's good, isn't it? You'd have to say that something here. You could hate it. Look, it's repulsive to most people. Then, because I'm so dehydrated, I have to eat water as well as
drink it.
A whole cucumber.
Just
gone.
Just chew through.
Absolutely. Yeah. Take the whole thing off. Wash the whole thing.
What point do you introduce the cucumber?
This is after the popcorn.
So you finished.
This is all gone.
Savories and a bit of the Sour Patch Kids.
The popcorn's done. This is like popcorn. 4 or 5 hours in, and like I don't know how many episodes of whatever series I'm watching.
And you have to take sort of a mortgage out every time you drink. I mean, this is exhausting. Yeah.
And then either there's another Deliveroo, which was usually something a bit healthier, like a Thai or like a ramen.
Nice.
But if not, maybe if I'm feeling a bit too full, but I always finish with tea, some rooibos tea to put me to bed.
Very South African of you.
Banging the bells in on
When did you fall in love with rooibos tea?
Mate.
Travels in South Africa?
No, actually, I think it was just like an ex liked it and I tried it.
Yeah, it's good.
So good. But yeah, and then with those.
So you finish with some chalky Lebanese milk.
Unbelievable.
They are amazing, amazing, amazing biscuits. Yep. Well, mate, we should probably finish the podcast there, but we won't. But that is the greatest hangover routine we've ever seen, 100%. Possibly
just
in the world.
About it.
Mate, you are. You're incredibly passionate.
I'm going to adopt quite a lot of that, I think.
Yeah, well, I know. I see you being.
Keep it updated. Yeah, come on.
Why do you keep.
No, because it's because, you know.
If I'm right, you studied at St. Paul's, you then go to Cambridge, you're a 3-time rugby blue, right? Is that right?
One time.
Okay, someone's doctored one of those articles about you.
Oh, great! I'll take it.
Three times. You then go to work in marketing. How do you then end up having?
Where is that written?
Well, I do a lot of research.
Okay, cool.
Is that good or not?
No, it's fine.
Is that right? Yeah. Is that correct?
It is correct. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I spend like the week just reading and being weird, just cool. So I can get good stuff on you. Anyway, so you work in marketing, and then is it fair to say you have a quarter life crisis and say fuck this, I want to go and be a chef, and off I go to Ballymallow Cookies with you?
Yeah, totally.
Talk us through it.
I mean, I really enjoyed my time at marketing and all that. I worked in a bit of tech before as well, and I enjoyed it, but I don't know. I just think I'd always wanted to be a cook, and it just that the kind of that it just never felt like it was a possibility, really, because the impression of cooking is that it's a very you know, intense, horrible environment. You know, you sacrifice your social hours. Everyone's an alcoholic or a drug addict. You know, it has this perception of it, which I think is now changing, which is great. But it just didn't ever feel like a viable option, really, particularly, as you mentioned, you know, like privileged education, all that kind of stuff. But it just got to that point. I was just like, I just would love to work in food in some way. And I never really thought actually that would necessarily mean being a chef. It was just kind of like, I might just want to do what I'm doing now, maybe marketing in food. That was kind of my gateway thought. But I was like, I'd always wanted to go to Ballymaloe. It just was like the most amazing sounding place. And it's only 12 weeks, so it's not this kind of like huge upheaval of your life.
Yeah.
So very sort of suddenly, just one day in the office, just like put the deposit down and was just like, fuck it. And then started telling all my loved ones about it. And, you know, I was quite scared to tell them because I thought they'd be like, oh, what are you doing? You know, I was just getting to that point in the career where I was starting to maybe get promoted and be paid a bit more and all that kind of stuff, more responsibility. Every single one was like, that sounds great. And they just, I think people around me felt that it was the right thing, which was hugely helpful, and just made me feel like it was great. And then I just kept going. And then when I was there, a few of the teachers were just like, your favorite thing is the cooking and the kitchen bit, because you do lots of other stuff. There's baking and fermenting and food business and all that kind of stuff that you do, farming and stuff. And they were just like, you clearly want to be in the kitchen. I was like, all right. So then applied for a stage at the River Cafe. So worked there for a week, and then was very lucky that two chefs, one went on maternity leave, one left, and they were like, we need someone on the rota next week. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it.
I'm in.
So, and then, yeah, just never really looked back from there.
Sam Fielding Green said Ballymaloe gives you the greatest education in terms of teaching you how to respect and understand produce. Is that right?
Definitely. I mean, particularly as somebody who grew up in a city and, you know, all of your vegetables are packaged like, you know, this cucumber that's got plastic around it.
Yeah.
And like every cucumber I'd ever seen has looked like this. Whereas, you know, I think our farm this year has got like 40 different types of cucumber growing in it.
Brilliant, yeah.
And they are like all so radically different, and it's so beautiful to see that. But if you've never worked, if you've never seen that, you know, there's no reason that you would know that, and there's no reason therefore that you would respect the ingredients that you see. And definitely it was backed up by going to the River Cafe, where all this incredible produce was coming in from Italy, and you see it in the fridges and you're like, I've never seen a tomato like that.
Yeah, well, you know, an amazing one too.
Yeah,
like Ballymaloe River Cafe.
It's very, very fortunate to have done it. It's definitely a path that a lot of people have done as
Sure, but it's really cool.
Talking about the River Cafe, you know, a lot of the guests who come in here say that that's the one place they'd always want to run and work in because it's so magical. Is it as magical on the other side of the counter as it is for us dining there, when we can sort of save up, you know, 3 years income?
I mean, it honestly is. I mean, because, I mean, it was my first job, so I didn't really know what it was like. I didn't have anything to compare it to. And I remember kind of thinking, like, people complain about how horrible working as a chef is and how tough it is.
It's so lovely.
It really isn't. This is so nice. And then obviously now I've worked in other places and now work, you know, at the Bull or whatever. It's a lot harder. It's more rewarding in other ways, but it is a lot harder, and it's a lot more, it's a bit uglier in a way. There's a lot more hard yards that have to be put in, whereas at the River Cafe, it's such a well-oiled machine and it's so iconic, and there's so many people there, and it's so busy. I mean, you go there on a Monday night and it's like 200 people.
Yeah.
It's just this whole other thing, and it is so idyllic, yeah. I mean, it really is.
Favourite dish on the menu when you're at the River Cafe?
Spaghetti vongole, probably, with Bataga.
Give us one more.
Dover sole in the oven, in the wood oven. You can have a Dover sole cooked in a wood oven anywhere else in the whole world, and it won't taste as good as it does there, in my opinion.
Did you have much interaction with Ruth Rogers or not?
Yeah, yeah.
Did she come in?
So involved.
Really?
Yeah, she's there every day.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she ran the pass on countless services when I was there. I don't know how much she's doing now, because I obviously haven't been there for a while, but when I was there, she was so involved.
Sure, she's still in.
Writing the menus. Yeah. And if there was anybody ever a little bit more junior than the top three head chefs who'd been there for 20 years, she would call up and be like, talk me through the menu. You know, she's like all over it. She's an amazing.
What I think's amazing, just to stay on the River Cafe for a minute, and I've actually never worked there, but I've worked for people who work there. We've had people come on the pod and talk about working in equivalent big restaurant, like famous restaurants, and you don't get near the food to begin with at all as a chef. You might be picking herbs or whatever, but my understanding of the River Cafe is like, you are touching the food, you're cooking the food that's going out, even when you go in as a stage or as a junior chef.
Sure, but you get totally thrown into it.
Which I think is very rare.
Yeah.
And quite amazing.
Totally. Yeah, totally. I mean, within a few months, you can be filleting fish and prepping meat, which was, I remember in my first week, I was making beef carpaccio, and I was like, you're letting me slice this beef fillet. Like, that's what it, whereas, you know, in their mind, that's like a lower down position job to be doing. Whereas at the time, I was like,
but you're still literally having an impact on,
like, you know, 100 quid's worth of beef. I'm just getting to just do whatever I want to it. You know, I had no idea what I was doing. Which is so cool, which I think is why loads of people come out as really confident cooks.
Yeah.
It was then on to the now Michelin star Dorian. in Notting Hill alongside Max Kern. What was it like working with him? You obviously created this kind of rock and roll all-star team to create and start the restaurant. I mean, the accreditation on the other people, the other chefs, you know, alongside Max was amazing as well. What was that whole experience like starting Durin and then getting that Michelin star within a year? I know you'd probably gone just before that. But.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing. I mean, there's a real sort of, I mean, it's just one of those things where everything kind of came together. I mean, like, I got involved a little bit later on in the process. I kind of only got involved maybe a few months before we opened. So there was a lot of pre-work that obviously got done before that. But the moment it opened, it was just like a bit of a sensation, you could tell, for the locals. And, you know, it helped so much that the owner, Chris De Silva, knows everybody in Notting Hill and is friends with everybody and is just the most charming, hilarious, awesome, energetic man ever. And it just immediately became what it needed to become. I think it's a little bit similar to what we've done at the Bull. It just very quickly that we kind of, what we set out to do, we just managed, it all kind of clicked in place due to, you know, so many different factors.
Yeah.
But definitely the food, I mean, from my perspective, it was a experience in like Michelin style food. Not that the River Cafe isn't Michelin, but it's just, it obviously has a Michelin star, but there's a different type of chefiness and the way that things were organized and the way that things were stored and like even just like the strictness of the labeling and everything was so impressive and it was so regimented. There was that I learned really like the organizational side of it, which was amazing. But then also just like the flair with the food and just seeing how to, you know, the River Cafe is very traditional. It's pan cooking, it's cooking stuff in a wood oven, whereas this was like backpack stuff cooked in sous vide and like all those kind of things.
So were you quite open to that?
Yeah, it was amazing.
I know people come out of the River Cafe or restaurants that are similar and you're a bit sniffy about that. You think, oh, come on.
No, I think it was just, you know, it was just so cool to see and like seeing all these purees getting made and all these sauces and like how everything came together. It's honestly a totally different thing. Like it is just, because you come in the morning at the River Cafe, you cut up some tomatoes, you put them in the oven and I was like, God, that's amazing. And it is amazing what that is. But then it's like you come here and it's like, you know, dice up these tomatoes and cook them in this way and then add it with this and then put this thing on and then cook this thing at 50 degrees, whatever. And the output is also amazing, but it is so different.
So the mise en place is a lot harder.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And it was so, you know, it was hard going, the mise en place, but the final result was incredible.
Is Max Kern a genius? I mean, is he one of a generation?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, but also like the supporting team are amazing there, like Mike and Kai and everybody. It's just so pumping in there, which I love in a restaurant. Like you're excited. Like the moment you walk in the door, you're like, oh, I'm in a special place.
And every day banged out.
Yeah, and it's just like, there's a lot of places that you don't feel that. You walk into a restaurant, it's like, oh, let me sit at a table. Yeah, it's like you walk in there and you're like, shit, I've got a booking, but am I even going to be allowed to sit down? Like, this place is fucking rocking.
Yeah.
And it's quite exciting, I think. And a lot of restaurants don't have that. And then you sit down and the food is unbelievable.
Did you get any of your dishes on the menu? Did you have any creativity on that?
No, I mean, I think like definitely at the beginning there were discussions, but I think to be honest, my style of food is very different to that. Yeah. And I was just happy just to kind of, just to see what was going on, just to learn from it. And I've taken so much from there, inspiration and little techniques and little things.
What was your favourite dish in the menu at Durin?
The steak. I mean, the steak is unbelievable.
Why is it so good?
The beef itself is extraordinary. It's they have their own beef that's like, there's no other way you can get it. I think they basically bought all the cows on a farm. Yeah. And it's cool. A cross between German Holstein and Japanese Wagyu. So it's super fatty, but it's also very, very like beefy. So it's like robust whilst also being incredibly fatty. It's like phenomenal beef, cooked over fire, cooked incredibly well. Like the way that I learned, like the learning how to cook beef there.
How do you cook it? Come on.
Brush it in butter, hit it really, really, really hard over the coals, rest it, hit it really, really, really hard. So you get this unbelievable caramelization. And obviously, when it's cooked really well, it's caramelized, not burnt. You know, there's always a fine line. And sometimes I remember you'd be on the first night we were ever in that restaurant, we had this party and I was on the grill and we had maybe like, it was like this 60 person party, whatever, cooking like 15 steaks. I like put them all on the grill at once and the fat basically formed this like fat fire.
Yeah.
Literally almost set fire to the restaurant.
Jesus.
So sometimes you would get, you can overchar them definitely. if you've ever been there, it's like, honestly, like the fire, it's so theatrical. The fire is just like going, but they're so fatty that.
It's awesome.
Yeah, so the steak's amazing. I mean, the sweetbreads as well are incredible. He changes them up with what he does, but every time they're amazing.
Well, and you're going there tonight for supper?
I'm going there tonight, yeah.
Lucky man. I'm actually off to the Bear tonight. Kemba, heard about that? Naughty Piglets guy? Maybe not.
No.
Okay. Not as interesting as a Mission Star Russian called Duran. Let's move on to food. Ben, why don't you bring out your food and we'll put it alongside this hangover sort of selection of goods.
Lounge, yeah.
Yeah, nice. I'm going to... Well, you know, I like to fuck up something each time.
Yeah, of course. Well, what's the fuck up this week?
Well, I tried to make nudie because they're my favourite thing to make.
We had nudie on the menu the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
I love nudie.
So good.
Have you had nudie?
I don't think so.
So it's like fundamentally the filling of a ravioli, perhaps.
Oh, I love it.
You set them in semolina.
Okay.
And they're delicious. And I made them, but I didn't give them long enough to semolina.
Okay.
So they're a bit shit, but delicious.
Okay. Well, let's get them out.
And otherwise, I just made like a banging chicken curry and I made some paratha. And I just thought it'd be a nice thing to
do. Oh, nice. Well, let's get it all out. Let's get that all out. When we do, let's ask your go-to delivery order, George.
I've actually been smashing Dishoom recently.
Everyone loves a bit of Dishoom.
It's good. Their delivery's really,
what'd you go
really
for?
Good. Was it the chicken McCarney?
Yeah.
Do you know what? Their chutney is unbelievable. It comes in a jar. The pickled. I get the broccoli salad with... I quite like having similar to the... what we're talking about with the bitter leaves, having like something crunchy and fresh on the side of it. So they have this like really nice raw broccoli salad with rice and then the curry, the like McCarney curry, bit of garlic naan, and then the pickled... They have like pickled carrots and chilies.
So good.
Spicy, but they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You go to 3-course dinner party. You're hosting one next week. It's spring. What are you doing? Don't think too much about it. Just go with it.
So I like to basically not have to do a lot if I'm having people over for dinner because I don't want to be in the kitchen the whole time. I've done that in the past where, you know, I was trying to prove myself, whatever. Now I'm basically like as little as possible. So I have everything on the table when people first arrive for the starter. It'll just be like cheeses, meats, some veg, just sit down, bit of bread. And then people sit down when they want and eat it. Then I'll do a big pasta. Maybe like a Mitrichana or something.
Making your own pasta, I hope.
Depends.
Okay.
Depends.
River Cafe boys, come on.
It just depends if I can be bothered or not.
Okay, fine.
I mean, if I was trying to impress someone, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But
well, I'm coming around for dinner. I hope you're trying to impress me.
Oh, you're coming around.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, look at those.
Oh, wow.
Those are great fun.
I mean, they've been in my little satchel, but they're not as hot as they
are. No, they do look great. And what's actually in there?
Spinach, nutmeg, parmesan, black pepper, a bit of lemon zest.
Wow. You're even getting a different gear, the great George Williams.
They should have like a really nice like little coating.
Well, George, why don't you try one of those? And as you do, tell us your dessert. What was your dessert? Did we get there?
No.
This is so much food.
How many people is it?
You, me, and Ben, and our other half, so six.
Maybe a little mini tiramisu. Something like that.
Really? Okay.
Just something that I can just have in the fridge and just slice it up for you.
What do you think about a panna cotta on a dessert menu? Somebody came in the other day and said like panna cottas are now being cancelled because they're like too easy to do.
I've not heard that.
No, yeah.
Are these supposed to be sort of paired together?
No, absolutely.
Are you sure? Because, you know.
Actually, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. Everything should be paired.
That's lovely, mate.
Is it all right?
That's lovely.
Just move
I'm
it.
Sorry. That, yeah,
their access.
You know, they should have had about 48 hours. Oh,
you can taste the nutmeg.
Too much?
No, it's lovely.
I love feedback.
Those look amazing. You didn't make those, did you? Those look incredible.
So we had these on. We had like nettle. We called them ricotta. Sorry, we called them ricotta dumplings. But we did those with nettles.
Nudies.
Well, you know, they're not necessarily nudie. They're just technically, you know,
they are ricotta dumplings.
Yeah. That's great.
Oh, that's delicious. I saw this melting away. Sorry, not melting away, but sort of boiling away in your Instagram post.
Yeah.
Right. That's amazing. Those are delicious.
I think these could go.
Me too.
Well, I've got some spoons.
As we try a combination of what chicken curry is that?
It's a sort of South Indian chicken curry.
Okay.
Oh, it's lovely.
Sort of inspired by who was it? Who was talking about South Indian curry the other day? I can't remember. Kit, I think it was.
Was it Kit?
Yeah, I believe so. Anyway, let's go to your go-to meal deal combination. We're going to lower the tone as we always do. I'm sat with a guy who's worked in a Michelin star restaurant. He's probably going to get a Michelin star at the Bull and Charbury, and I'm asking, what's his meal deal combo? But then saying that, he bought the weirdest hangover food I've ever seen in my life. So
I've never ever had a meal deal. Is that really bad? That probably says something about me.
I'm shaking my head. The producer's shaking his head at me.
And it's not that I don't like sort of junk food or supermarket food or newsagent food or whatever.
Okay.
I just don't think that there's any point in having a sandwich from somewhere like Tesco when I'm not going to make crisps at home or sweets or chocolate or, you know, so I'm happy to have that in whatever form.
That curry is unbelievable. Sorry,
that curry is so good. Yeah, I love that.
You didn't make that, did you?
Of course I made it.
That is unreal.
I trained in Sri Lankan and
that's lovely
food back in the day. I grate my own coconut for coconut milk.
And you made those
as
well.
Fucking around, Freddie.
Yes, mate, that's lovely.
That is insane.
I think these go.
You were wasted doing the chicken restaurant. You should have just gone straight up and done like a Sri Lankan restaurant.
I've been wasted my whole career.
What's your go-to spice? Always in the pantry, always in the cupboard. What do you use the most? Or ingredient? Go-to ingredient? Spice ingredient? I don't know.
I'd probably put anchovies in too many things.
Okay.
I love that. That's quite classic.
You can't put
like my girlfriend.
Too many.
She can't stop putting them in everything. It's making me absolutely livid.
Oh, really? You're not happy?
Well, every time I open the fridge, there's like 1,000 like open half-open tins of anchovies.
It's her anchovies and your kimchi. And it's, no yeah, yeah. For
yeah. That's all we've got in there. Yeah. Honestly.
Does she eat them straight?
Or does she literally everything. Like I can't get, she eats them straight, breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Really?
Yeah, we're living like a sort of a ration family in southern Spain or something. It's got, yeah. What about your go-to item? Talking about fridges, always in the fridge. Mine, as Ben just alluded to, there's kimchi or maybe those Polish pickled kind of cucumbers.
I mean, probably black pepper saucy salt and Pirello picante olives.
Feel me.
I just fucking
you can tell you're a man who used to live in Notting Hill.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing is that I don't really eat. I don't eat a lot outside of work. Yeah, so yeah.
Pirellos are,
you know, but they're just the best. And there's you might as well just, you know.
What about the random fridge snack combo? You get back from work. You're a bit drunk. You've had a couple of drinks in the bowl after an incredibly successful shift, and then you go like, oh, I can't be asked to make something. I'm going to make a weird combo from the fridge. What are you doing?
I mean, it would just be something in a sandwich. I mean, I'll put literally anything really in between bread. It can be pickles, crisps, bit of meat, bit of cheese, some leftover curry, whatever, in between bread. Or actually, I think I do like mixing stuff because I really like cereal. Like I'm kind of obsessed with cereal. And I'll often, so my classic cereal is 50% crunchy nut, 30% normal Shreddies, and then 20% Cocoa Pops.
Fucking hell. You are a lunatic.
Yeah, that's a good blend.
So good. Yeah, yeah. Such a good blend.
I would never do it personally.
Really?
Yeah, it drives my wife absolutely mental. But yeah.
It's so good.
Just having one cereal in a bowl is a madness to me.
Really?
Because the crunchy nut's too sugary.
Yeah.
So you need to cut through it with the Shreddies. And then the Cocoa Pops give some chocolatey milk.
Do you have it with milk?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I have dry cereal.
What?
Yeah, is that an insult?
And you're calling me a lunatic?
Yeah, sorry,
mate,
I'm a lunatic.
That's insane.
Chewing through a bowl of dry cereal.
Yeah, yeah, I get those choco wheats and I just like, yeah, I like to kind of, you know, make my life even more miserable than it is. And I just sit there with a small bowl of those chocolate Wheato thing, you know, the wheat square things.
How are you moisturizing your mouth?
I don't know, you're not. It's a punishment. What? It's a form of punishment.
Unbelievable.
It's a form of punishment to start the week.
So good.
Thanks, Joel. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Can I just say to all the listeners, and we will do have a bit of a laugh at Ben's expense when he comes in and goes, oh no, fuck this up, whatever. He has absolutely killed it this week.
Which is rare.
You've done a bloody good job. I hate you filmed all that.
I did not film all that, Freddie, because that would make good content, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would have made some good content for
the ever-growing social
media page with, you know. We're working hard on. Anyway, what's the worst day in the kitchen? You've now worked in three incredible restaurants / pubs. What's been the worst day?
So my second ever day at Dorian.
This is having burnt the steaks on the first night.
Yeah,
I mean, it might be the third day. I came to that kitchen and really, I didn't know the people there and they were very, very impressive. They'd all worked at serious places and they were very different style cooks to me. Like they knew their shit and they were super organized and proper chefs. And we had this guy come in who was like, he'd never been a chef before, but he'd basically applied for a job, I think basically because he'd seen my Instagram. Turns out he actually followed me for a while. He's a lovely guy called Tom. Essentially taking this job, I think, because he'd known me or whatever, followed me through lockdown or whatever. Really, really sweet. But his first experience of me was me having to clean the fryer. And I went to classic, turn on the tap, whatever, emptied the fryer, cleaned it out, got rid of it, then put the new oil in, but hadn't re-put the tap back on.
Oh, Jesus.
And I mean, I literally spilled like a whole 20-litre thing. And this kitchen was like brand new. And honestly, I was like on my hands and knees, just being like, please, no one see, like no one come upstairs. Obviously, Max comes up and is like,
fuck are you doing, right, George?
No, he's obviously classic, but he's like the nicest man in the world. He's like, you all right, mate? And then this poor guy basically was like, obviously, have known about me in the past, like in before, comes in and it's just me and him on our hands and knees for like half an hour, just like just cleaning this oil.
Welcome to restaurants.
So bad, yeah.
Stressful. Okay, where's your favorite restaurant in the world then? Apart from
it's the River Cafe.
It is River Cafe.
Yeah, just because of the feeling I have.
Everyone
there.
Says that, don't they? The I think I we need there. To go back there.
Get on board, friend.
Let's go together.
Well, let's go together, George. It's very kind of you to offer to pay as well. Thank you so much.
Sweet.
Right, we're talking about locations. We're going to finish off with your go-to locations. Your go-to weeknight restaurant
is Kiln. Too fancy?
No.
Yeah, I just love Kiln so much.
What are you getting there?
The monkfish curry. Like anything that's not too spicy. The larb. Just like, I love like the rice with the curry and then something fresh on the side. whatever, really. But I just love the fact that it's like probably the one of the only places that, I mean, like, I like eating by myself anyway, but it encourages solo dining, yeah. And it's very few places offer that. And it's just got a great vibe in there, and the beer's cold and fizzy, and it's just, yeah. I don't know, it's just such a great place. I love it.
Favourite place for a special supper?
Do you know, so one of my family's favourite places, a place called Cambio de Tercio in South Ken. Not many people know. I think they've got a sort of like a classic sort of following, but I love it there. It's like a classic family place that we've always been to.
Spanish, is it?
Spanish, yeah. It's really, really
good.
What
do you get in there? Just the classic kind of...
Everything, yeah. But they kind of do like slightly modern takes on like the classic tapas. Love that. And then I actually went to Arlington recently, which was just so cool. That's like Jeremy King's new place.
Yeah.
That would be the kind of place that I'd take someone on a date if I like wanted them to think that I was really cool, you know, because it's like, it's proper, like you feel like you're going back into like the old days when like restaurants were like full of,
and
like
literally, Coke and Cirque.
I walked in, yeah, exactly, and like I walked in and it was like Angela Hartnett, Gordon Ramsay, you know, all that, and I was just kind of like, oh, that's so
this is cool. Have you had any famous diners apart from Jeremy at the Bull Strawberry?
Yeah, the Beckhams love it.
Really? That's pretty good.
Gary Lineker's been there a few times. Yeah, we've had quite a few, actually.
It's that part of the world, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, exactly. Basically, if you imagine anybody who'd be at Farmhouse, they may have potentially
come to you too. Yeah.
So that would be your place for a date. What about your go-to pub, apart from the Bull?
The Chancellor's. I mean, everyone must say that, because the pizza, Carl's Pizza, is just unbelievable. The crisp pizza.
Yeah,
it's just...
Would you say that's like, your best place for pizza as well?
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Okay.
But like everyone bangs on about New York pizza, and like me and my boss and stuff, we went to New York on like a bit of a trip there, and we ate pretty much at every pizza place, and I'd say there were maybe one or two that could compete with crisp. Every other one was
worth the hype.
I think it's so good. And also because that's the pub that all the River Cafe people drink at. So we'd go there, you know, after work almost every day, and Carl came up to us at one point and was like, guys, I've bought like a little clay pizza oven, and this is like 3 or 4 years ago. It's like, I bought a clay pizza oven, I might just sling some pizzas out over summer. And we were like, yeah, cool, man, that sounds great. Like, you know, cool, man. Like, and he was like, oh, what do you think about this? And we were like, yeah, well, you can get these tomatoes from this supplier or whatever, you know, just like whatever. Yeah.
You're the reason for their success.
No, not at all. He is, because he's genius. But then he basically obviously went away for lockdown, practice, came back, bought, and I'm pretty sure he has the same pizza ovens that we have at the River Cafe. I'm pretty sure he did a day at the River Cafe on the pizza section to like try it out. And then seeing, because we used to go there when it was like, you could just walk in, get a pizza and a pint. And then now it's actually his success. It completely boomed off just after I'd left. But like going there now, it's just like queues out the door, and you know, there's no, because it used to be like an old man pub, and you know, they'd be sitting there watching the Fulham games and stuff. Now it's just crazy. I remember I was going to the bar and there was like a Danish person, a Brazilian person, all these people, different nationalities, like pilgrimage to Hammersmith to this random little pub. And it's totally worth the hype, in my opinion. But the Guinness is also great, so it's like Guinness and pizza.
What about your go-to hidden gem?
So also in Hammersmith, and also a River Cafe spot, is a place called Thai 101. So a lot of people talk about like Singbury in Leytonstone as being like probably like the best sort of Thai restaurant. This is like right up there. It's like proper Thai. There's like this fish salad, which is like deep fried fish. It's unbelievable. And probably the best food I've had outside, definitely the best food I've had outside Europe, is in Thailand. And it properly takes you back there. They have these Isan sausages that are just like lemongrassy and ginger. Oh, they're just unbelievable. It's like that kind of food that like makes every bit in your mouth pop, and like it's super indulgent, but it's also fresh and doesn't make you leaving feeling like, you know, you've eaten too much. It's just so good, and you get a beer tower. It's so good.
Ugh. George, you've been absolutely wonderful. I mean, we could sit here all day. We could get I mean, if there were more Australians, we could get pissed, then try your hangover routine, then have a curry, then just keep going. But what we are going to finish on is your dream long weekend getaway and itinerary, a foodie weekend. If you could go anywhere for a long 4-day break with your girlfriend or just with your mates, where are you going? What are you doing?
I actually think going to Bruton is pretty cool. You could stay at Babington House
if you remember.
Soho House member.
Are you still a member?
I am, yes.
Congratulations. So am I till June.
No, I'm not a member.
Because that is like, I mean, so our owners, as a special present for doing Christmas and all that kind of stuff, we went down to Babington House, and quite a few of us have worked for Soho Farmhouse Soho House Group, whatever. So got a nice deal there, whatever. And I mean, that is such a nice spot. But then just like 20 minutes down the road is obviously Bruton, and you've got the old pharmacy, and then obviously Ossip and all that. And I think you could do a real, and then you've got the Three Horseshoes pub. You could do a real nice little
great weekend.
Alternatively, you come to Charlbury and you know, you've got Lots of good options.
The bull and the bell.
Yeah, the bull and the bell. Yeah.
Jump between the two.
Yeah, all the bull and the bull.
You've been absolutely wonderful. We are going to finish off the way we always do, which is actually, we say, of everything you've mentioned, from your hangover food to your meals to your own creations to all the wonderful things in the River Cafe and beyond, what are the three dishes you're going to save?
I mean, I've got to... can I save this, like, the hangover?
That can be one. Sure. That can be your starter.
Oh, so I have to eat...
Well, it doesn't actually have to be a starter, main put. It's just three things. Sorry.
I mean,
but that can be one.
That
can be...
Yeah,
so your hangover remedy, which is about 10 to 12 items, will be one thing. We'll be very generous.
Yes, I'm allowed that then the morning after I have my filthy martini into a bowl of spaghetti vongole with loads of Bottarga grated over it. That would be like my main meal.
Nice.
Ideally with some white wine, if I'm allowed that.
Oh, you are.
Then,
right.
It comes as part of the meal, yeah.
Honestly, I'd have rooibos and chocolate Leibniz as like a little, as my little desserts, to be completely honest.
Beautiful combo.
Yeah, that would probably be it. Oh, well, actually, this curry, mate.
This curry is bloody good. Please get tucked into that.
Curry's a freebie. You don't have to include that.
As you get tucked into that, we'll say thank you so much for listening. George, we wish you the best of luck. We're going to come visit you up in Charlbury because obviously last time I could only get a pint and a pack of crisps, but I want so much more this time around. It's been wonderful for you to come down. Good luck with everything. Enjoy Durham tonight, and hopefully we'll see you go up that chart of top 50 best pubs. Next time you're here, you'll be in the top five, hopefully. Maybe in the top one. So thank you so much for coming. Guys, we know a lot of you listening and we really appreciate that. Please rate us 5-star. Please subscribe, share, comment, and send it on to other people who may enjoy just three guys having a good chat. until next week, have a good one. And George, those are your go-tos.
Thanks,
George.
Thank you.